I'm Lisa DeLay, and you're listening to the Spark My Muse podcast. Welcome to Spark My Muse, everyone. Today is a dream expert on lucid dreaming, Robert Wagoner, and he is also an author of the book, Lucid Dreaming, Gateway to the Inner Self. Thank you so much, Robert, for joining me today.
Oh, thanks, Lisa. It's great to be here.
Before we get started on your background in lucid dreaming, and you've done it for, I think it's about 40 years, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
It's just been such a long time, and you have such expertise. I can't wait to dig into what lucid dreaming actually is for everybody. But I wanted to know what has your involvement been in sort of the science-y part of it, or speaking on lucid dreams. What has your involvement been with that?
You know, it's been relatively extensive. I've given lectures at places like the University of Tel Aviv and Tel Aviv Israel and Hebrew University in Jerusalem. Here in a couple months, I'll be giving a talk at the University of Sussex in England. And I've given talks at places like the University of Michigan, University of Washington, Bothell, Sonoma State, Iowa State, Evergreen State, and so a lot of universities and college campuses around the nation and around the world. And I really like talking to students because many of them have had lucid dreams, and they're just so excited to have someone come and talk about the science of it. And so the science is, and the story of lucid dreaming kind of starts from the late 70s. When some researchers like Keith Hearn in England and Stephen LaBerge in California, they both separately realized that you could actually prove lucid dreaming. And the way they suggested you could prove it, or get evidence, is you could bring someone into the sleep lab, have them, when they become lucidly aware in the dream, move their eyes left to right 8 times, and then that strange movement of their eyes left to right 8 times would signal that they're lucidly aware in a dream. And so that means that they'd be consciously aware in a dream. Mm. So there's some science behind it, but also there's deep spiritual aspects to it and just fascinating experiences as well.
Yeah, I hope we will be able to talk about the therapeutic and healing aspects of what you can do within this conscious state within the dream state, which is really fascinating to me. So in the sleep lab, they get people into a REM state, which they know is a dream state, and then the people are basically able to, from this state, kind of signal back, yes, I'm dreaming. It's really unbelievable when you think about it.
Oh, it's great. And the beautiful thing is that people have been talking about lucid dreaming for thousands of years, but this scientific evidence didn't emerge until around 1980, 1981. And so it's great when you have something that people have been talking about for thousands of years and kind of an inner practice that's hard to access. Mm. When you get the scientific evidence for it, it's really a game changer.
Wow, I'll say. And then as a child, you had a pretty significant dream life from what I've seen in your other materials. I've watched your videos and things like that. What was dream life in a significant portion of your, would you like look forward to go to sleep and dream and things like that as a kid?
I had a fascinating dream life as a young kid. And, you know, sometimes something like, you know, like a meadowlark one time landed on my chest in a dream. And as it sang, I understood its song in English. And I began to sing with the meadowlark, and I woke up singing the meadowlark's song. Oh. And it was a beautiful song. I think it was kind of a welcome to the morning and kind of a welcome to new life. And boy, when I woke up, I wish I had written it down. But, you know, when you're 9 or 10 years old, it doesn't occur to you to write it down. Mm-hmm. And within the day, you know, I'd forgotten the words to the song, but I definitely remember the feeling. Mm-hmm. And also as a young child, you know, I had some strange experiences as well. Sometimes I would have what people call precognitive dreams. Mm-hmm. And it was so strange to think that you could get information before something happens. Like in a dream, I might hear someone say a specific set of unusual words. And then I'd wake up, and 6 hours later, someone would say that exact same set of words.
Wow.
And I remember as a little kid, I wondered how that could be. And then I remembered, you know, from attending church that, you know, the minister would often say that God's the same today, yesterday, and forever. And so it occurred to me that, you know, well, maybe God exists in some timeless realm where everything is known. Mm. And so that's how you access information from the future, is because, you know, there's kind of this realm of the spacious now or the spacious present. But you're right, my early lucid dreaming really, or my early dreaming, you know, just whetted my appetite for what I later learned to be lucid dreaming.
Well, that leads me to want to ask you, was the dream life stuff that you could talk about with religious, in a religious context, did it fit in? I know if you had a Christian background, in the Bible, there's a lot of things about dreams, but if you came from another context, I mean, dreams are really play into a lot of ancient texts, but was that something you could say, hey, I'm going to tell my pastor that I already had a dream about this and it came true? Or was that something you didn't think would be received? Or how did that work for you?
You know, it was a little bit strange because you realize pretty quick on that about half the people out there aren't even recalling their dreams. and so when you begin to talk about dreams, you can tell the half that have no interest in that topic at all. And then the other half, you know, they're mildly interested. And so it was really something that, to a large degree, I kept to myself. But in my family, though, we talked about dreams and, you know, we'd bring up interesting things. And I also have a feeling that my mom would frequently pick up things that were going on in the family by virtue of paying attention to dreams. And so anyway, I kind of grew up in a supportive environment, but I realized that the larger culture really kind of devalued dreaming.
And did you keep any kind of dream journal or anything like that growing up or later on in life?
You know, I began to write down significant dreams, ones that Carl Jung might call big dreams. Even as in my early teens, I realized some of these dreams were just so powerful and had such energy behind them. But it probably wasn't until I went off to college that I formally began to keep a dream journal. You know, by that time, you have your own space and you can do your own thing. And so it probably wasn't until college. But now I have just lots and lots of dream journals. I mean, I have a filing cabinet that's full of dream journals. And I know there's people who do much better work at keeping track of their dreams, and their filing cabinets overflow. But it's a fascinating thing because, you know, we have our waking physical life, but there's also like this other track, and it's kind of the life of our dreams, and they kind of tell a different story about who and what we are and what we're dealing with. Hmm. And so it's kind of like having a diary, but it's in a symbolic language, the language of dreams.
Yeah, absolutely. And for people who are listening to this and they're like, I don't remember any of my dreams. Usually when people, I tell people that I normally, this doesn't come up in typical conversation, but I tend to have a very rich and very vivid dream life. And except when I get overwhelmed and stressed out and that kind of goes by the wayside, but I will tell people, well, write down your dreams as soon as, or anything you can remember as soon as you wake up in the morning before you move around. And then you'll start becoming aware of your dreams more often and more regularly. And, you know, basically you're keeping a dream journal. And I was wondering if that's the advice you give people. And also, if you tend to remember your dreams every night.
You know, I do tend to remember about two or three dreams a night. Mm. But what I tell people, I go, normally there's three reasons that we might not remember our dreams. First, we've just gotten out of the habit. We kind of devalue them. We're busy. You know, we just wake up and get on with our day. And we don't do, like you're saying, think, you know, what was I just dreaming as soon as we wake up? Because if we don't do that, then they're likely to evaporate after 4 or 5 minutes and we won't be able to recall them. Some people are on medications that if they look at the side effects, sometimes they'll see the side effects are that they hinder dreaming. Mm. And so you have to look if you're taking any medications. But there's a third category. There's some people out there who tell me they can't remember a dream, you know, like in 10 years or something. Mm. And sometimes I remember once I replied to a student who told me that. I said, well, how old are you right now? And he said, I'm 26. And I said, you haven't remembered a dream in 10 years. And he said, right. I asked him, what happened to you 10 years ago when you were 16? And he said, now that I think about it, my parents had this horrible divorce. It was just utterly horrible. And I told him, I go, look, I don't know, but it may be the case that at that time you began to have nightmares or something or were stressed out about the whole situation and just told yourself to stop your dream recall. Mm. If you want to see if you can begin to remember dreams, just announce to your larger awareness before you go to sleep that you allow yourself now to have dreams again and that you open up to it. And the next morning I saw this young man, and he was dancing when he saw me. He said that he had made this request to his larger awareness, and he said as soon as he fell asleep, he said it was like 10 years of a dream slideshow, just image after image after image. And he said when he woke up in the morning, he was so happy that he hadn't lost the capacity to dream. Mm. And so sometimes, you know, because of traumas or whatever, people just shut down that dreaming part of their self. But normally, you can reclaim it just by announcing to your larger awareness, hey, I'm ready to remember my dreams.
Yeah, it's just opening yourself back up and kind of declaring that you're ready, and your brain goes, oh, okay, let's do this.
Right.
Yeah, and that kind of goes into the question of people who are like, yeah, who cares about dreams? I'm asleep. They don't think that that's useful time. I think it's very useful time, and I would ask you, you know, why bother remembering dreams? Why take an interest in them? What would you say to someone who would say, you know, what's the use in remembering dreams, or why bother engaging in this world?
Right. So there's a lot of incredible works of art, literary works, books, poems, and all that have emerged by virtue of dreaming. Even the song by Paul McCartney, Yesterday, you know, Yesterday, yes. All My Troubles Went Away. He said he dreamt the music to it and jumped out of bed and ran to the piano and started to play it so he could remember what it was. Mm. And so oftentimes we get this kind of creativity that occurs in dreams that can actually help us. And then there's people who have solved problems. The periodic table of elements that many of us saw in our science rooms in high school, that came to Dmitri Mendeleev in a dream. Mm. And then there's stories of Nobel Prize winners like Otto Loewi. He dreamt the chemical transmission of nerve impulses.
Whoa.
He dreamt the solution to it. They couldn't figure out, you know, how do these nerve impulses work, because they're not all connected in a single straight line. They have all these little axons and neurons and knots and all. Mm-hmm. But he realized that, you know, there's a chemical transmission that transmits the nerve impulse along, and he dreamt about it. And when he received the Nobel Prize, he encouraged the other scientists to remember their dreams. Yeah. And so there's that kind of creativity part of it. But there's also, I think, dreams put us in touch with kind of how our inner house is in order. Mm. So if our dreams are normally pleasant and relatively unremarkable in a negative sense, you know, I think that kind of just gives us, on the face of it, a good indication that things are going well, that we're taking care of emotional issues fine, that we're dealing with relationships okay. But when we start to have nightmares or big emotional dreams that wake us out of our sleep, mm-hmm. oftentimes those are kind of wake-up calls, and you know, that we're not paying attention to something, that there's something going on. And so if you pay attention to your dreams, oftentimes it'll give you new insights into living your life more completely, more healthfully, and more fully. So you don't have to, you know, have a disease, for example. You know, mm-hmm. if you get to it and deal with the issue beforehand because you paid attention to your dreams, then you might forego, you know, its later expression of mm-hmm. after being ignored all those years. So, mm-hmm. so there's a lot of reasons to pay attention to dreams, and you know, there's even more that we could talk about, but yeah. those are the basic ones.
Yeah, I totally agree. In terms of the problem solving, you know, we think of our brain shutting down when we're sleeping. Our body's shutting down, but the brain is just chugging right along. And what's interesting is that it can probably problem solve because there's certain areas that are sort of on a sleep cycle, obviously, but there's other areas that are firing and working along. And thank goodness our limbs are paralyzed because we would be acting things out. But I think that I've also had conversations in my dreams with people to solve problems with other people or solve problems in my life by asking questions of these people and saying, you know, asking advice of people in my dream and solving problems that way that I would never have thought of solving in real life, and just new ideas coming to me by asking figures in my dream. And probably has that happened to you as well?
You know, it has. Well, that's one thing I notice about my wife. About once a month, she'll tell me a dream, and almost invariably, mm-hmm. it has with her resolving a problem at work. Mm. You know, it's she figures it out or sees a new way or talks to somebody in the dream and they figure out a solution. And so I think you're right that dreams give us a chance to solve problems, but you have to pay attention and you have to remember them.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. And in terms of inner healing and like the therapeutic aspect of dreams, you talk a lot about that. And I've heard you speak on that in other venues. Maybe you can talk about some of the work that happens in terms of healing and the gateway to the inner self and in terms of that.
Right. So I taught myself how to lucid dream in 1975 when I was a junior in high school. So I've been lucid dreaming for 40 years now. And lucid dreaming refers to becoming consciously aware of dreaming while in the dream state. You see something impossible, for example, like a dinosaur, and then you think, wait a second, dinosaurs don't exist. Oh, this must be a dream. And so, you know, the first 5 or 6 years of lucid dreaming, I just kind of played around with it. You know, I didn't realize that it was really very important. So I just played. I flew around. I did things, made things appear, went through walls and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But as I went along, I realized that lucid dreaming actually has healing potential, and I first learned about it with people who have post-traumatic stress disorder. One of the main symptoms is recurring nightmares, and so these people have been in some horrible situation, whether it's in a war situation or something they saw at home or something that happened to them, and they just have recurring nightmares. And what I learned is that some of these people have realized that if they become lucidly aware just once, then the recurring nightmares just basically cease. Hmm. And I recall I interviewed a woman who told me, I do a magazine called The Lucid Dreaming Experience, and I interviewed this woman who was a airline mechanic for big airplanes at a major airport. And so she's like 26 years old. She was working on this big Boeing 767, I think, and it broke free from its moorings and rolled across her legs as she watched. And you can imagine what a horrific sight that would be, and also to then look down and see her mangled legs. And so she's in the hospital for 6.5 months. They ended up amputating one of her legs because it was so damaged. But she said the worst thing was that when she went home, every night she had nightmares. You know, something was chasing her, and she had to wake up screaming. Mm. And she said after a while it got so bad, she hated to fall asleep. Mm-hmm. That's how bad it was, because the nightmare. And then she came across a book on lucid dreaming, on becoming consciously aware of dreaming while in the dream state. She realized that some people were using lucid dreams for healing. And so that next night, she's being chased, you know, her typical nightmare. And she thinks, wait a second, how can I be running? I just have one leg.
Ah.
And so at that moment, she becomes lucidly aware. She turns around, and for the first time, she faces the nightmare monster. And she just looks at it, and she knows it's a dream, and she just smiles and says, bye, and flies off. Hmm. And she said she just had this incredible feeling of joy and euphoria. And she said it was funny to kind of see the monster get a perplexed look on its face. but after that, the nightmares basically ceased. And she said it was a dramatic moment in her kind of healing experience. Hmm. And so that's just kind of one aspect of healing, or using lucid dreams for healing.
Hmm. And in terms of other types of problems and other types of trauma, there's a lot of potential there to, I know with my own life, I have talked to my father who passed away in dreams. And, I've heard you speak about this too, that sometimes you can speak to people who have passed away in terms of getting advice or something like that. But sometimes it feels like you're actually speaking to the person and not to a dream figure. And I know that sounds really odd to say that, but that's actually what it felt like for me. It actually felt like I was speaking to my father and not to someone in a dream. And it was just very very realistic. And then there was one dream where my father said, this is the last time you're going to see me, and we can't do this anymore, because it had been 10 years. And he said, this is the last time. And we were in this library, and I was like, oh, I don't want these meetings to end. And he's like, but it has to. And then I have never dreamt of him again. And so it was really powerful. But I also learned a lot through those times of being with him. And, you know, sometimes I would wake up kind of crying because it would be a separation again, and it would be like, oh, I can't see him now. But I know that other people will remark on meeting someone in their dream who has passed away. And what can you say about that?
You know, I think this is another part of lucid dreaming and dreams that's very healing, because there's a lot of people who suffer mightily from grief at losing a loved one, whether it's a spouse or a mother or father or a child or something. And when we have these dream experiences, sometimes they can be very helpful. Mm-hmm. There's a wonderful book by Patricia Garfield called The Dream Messenger. And it's all about these kind of visitation dreams and how they can be healing. But the beautiful thing about lucid dreaming, so in a lucid dream, what happens is oftentimes we'll see the deceased person and we'll think, wait a second, how can this be that this person passed away? Mm-hmm. And then oftentimes a lucid dreamer will realize, oh, this is a dream. And the interesting thing then is, as a lucid dreamer, because you're consciously aware of it, then you have to decide, you know, well, wait a second, what am I dealing with here? am I dealing with a dream symbol, kind of a projection of my mind? Or am I dreaming of something else, like the spiritual essence of, you know, my mother or whatever? I remember once I was talking to a gentleman who told me that in his life, his mom had developed cancer while he was a teenager. And I think she died like when he was 19, and he had such rage against the world. He said he didn't go to college. He was a bouncer in a bar, which was a great job for him because he had such rage. And if someone wanted to get beat up and thrown out of the bar, he would be happy to oblige. He just had all this rage. And then he said one night, his mother, who was deceased, appeared in a dream. And he became lucidly aware and began to talk to her. And she said, look, I want you to give this piece of information to this particular person, and they'll understand what this is about. And so she kept repeating the information. And the gentleman said he woke up, you know, he's like 21 years old at that time. And he decided he had to figure out, you know, was this really a visit with his mom or just a dream symbol? And so he went to the old friend's house. And he said, look, last night I had a dream about mom, and she had this piece of information that she wanted to pass on to you. And the people were so happy to get the information because it made complete sense to them. Hmm. And at that moment, that young guy said it was like a healing occurred. Mm. He realized, wait a second, if I can get information from my deceased mother in a lucid dream, then this means that there's really something going on in life, that it's not just this place of suffering and hurt and you know, just, you know, unimaginable trouble. Mm. And he said, from that moment on, he pulled his head together. He got a job. He ended up becoming a very successful businessman and got involved in technology and stuff. But I think that's how healing it can be. Not only is there the joy of seeing the person again, but sometimes when you get information that you can later validate, mm-hmm. it kind of gives you an idea that there's more going on in this physical reality than is apparent on the surface, that at inner levels something more is going on.
Right. And also that whatever conscious state you have might be connected in some other way with other states or other realities that we can't somehow get to some other way. It's obviously very mysterious, and I'm not going to say I have it all figured out, but there's those connection points we have. And I was wondering if you have ever heard of anybody having a lucid dream that somehow connects with someone else having a lucid dream. Like, have you ever heard of a situation where people have a lucid dream with someone else at the same time? Do you know what I mean?
Right, right. Yeah, that's what we would call mutual lucid dreams. Mm-hmm. And I just received an email yesterday from a young woman who told me that she heard a podcast I was on, and she's a woman who has PTSD because she was in the armed forces, and she had never thought that it might be able to help with her PTSD. Mm. But she said that, you know, before she got into the Army, she had lucid dreams. And in fact, one time, she and one of her friends who was a lucid dreamer decided to meet up in a lucid dream. And so they kind of you know, knew what the scenario and knew what night it was to be. And both of them became lucidly aware and saw each other in the lucid dream, and they both reported what the other person did.
No.
You know, there are these kind of examples. Now in my first book, Lucid Dreaming, Gateway to the Inner Self, I have a chapter on mutual lucid dreams, and there's some wonderful examples of people. Oftentimes what happens, though, is one person will be lucidly aware and the other person will not be as aware. Mm-hmm. For example, I give one that my friend Ed Kellogg, he's a wonderful lucid dreamer, has a PhD in biochemistry, so a very intelligent guy. And so he called me up one morning and he goes, Robert, what did you dream last night? So I began to, you know, give him snippets of my three dreams. And he goes, okay, the one with you at the table, the woman who was seated directly across from you, was she wearing a blue dress and had on this funny little hat? And I said, yeah, Ed, she did. And he goes, okay, the guy to your right, yeah, was he wearing a white shirt and had glasses? And I go, yeah, Ed, he was. How do you know this? And Ed didn't respond. He said, well, tell me about the guy who was sitting to your left. And I said, you know, I really can't remember that guy very well.
And he's like, it's me?
Ed replies, yes. He goes, it's me.
Oh my gosh.
He didn't say it's me. He said, I sat to the left of you, and I had lucid awareness and all. And so when you have these moments and you get this kind of confirming evidence, it just kind of shows you that something really powerful is going on there, and it's something that you can explore. But I do want to say, though, that mutual lucid dreams, it's kind of probably the one of the more difficult advanced things you ever want to get into. I think this kind of like emotional healing is much easier to achieve. Mm-hmm. It's something that you just do with yourself, but mutual lucid dreaming is some. But I did want to say, though, when it comes to this area of emotional healing, so psychiatrists and psychologists have probably written 20 papers on instances of people using their lucid dreams to resolve recurring nightmares from post-traumatic stress disorder. Mm. And there's been some experiments, and they've basically confirmed that as well. So it's accepted. But what I don't think scientists or psychologists understand is that out there in the world, lucid dreamers are taking this further. They're using lucid dreams to heal phobias. Mm. You know, like let's say you have a fear of snakes or a mm-hmm. fear of insects or a fear of heights. Mm-hmm. But when people become lucidly aware, they're going, well, wait a second. I know this is a dream, so I can't be hurt. Oh, now I'm going to take a rope and go out the window and down this building and begin to overcome my fear of heights. Mm. And when they do that three or four times, suddenly their waking life phobia has disappeared.
Wow.
And that there was another case of people who have got rid of or dealt with their anxiety. There's a fair number of people who have generalized anxiety. They go around feeling anxious all the time. A lot of people are taking medications for that or dealing with a psychiatrist, and that's all well and good. But some people in lucid dreams are resolving their anxiety. And I do have to tell you about one fascinating dream that I read in a book by Charlie Morley. That this young man, Antonio, had been at a lucid dream workshop and was hearing about it. And he was a pretty good lucid dreamer, so he already knew about it. But anyway, that night he became lucidly aware in a dream, and he was going around doing various things, consciously aware that it was a dream. But he noticed that there was this woman who kept following him around. And finally, he got curious, and he just turned to this woman dream figure, and he says, excuse me, who are you? What do you represent? And she replied, I represent your brain, and I've come here to ask you to stop smoking. It bothers us. And so you have to realize, you know, in a lucid dream, unexpected things happen. You know, you'll have dream figures say totally unexpected things. And so this lucid dreamer, Antonio, really thought about it. And he responded to the woman, the representation of his brain. He goes, look, every time I've tried to stop smoking, I get cravings and begin smoking again. And so he said, if you can stop the cravings, then maybe I can stop smoking.
Hmm.
And she said something like, we'll see what we can do. And when he woke up, he claims that he had zero interest in smoking. He said that he could even hang out with smokers and it just had no effect on him. He just no longer had any interest in smoking. He just utterly, completely gave it up. And so the beautiful thing here is I think lucid dreaming would give us some insights in how to resolve some, you know, bad habits or obsessive compulsive disorders, and also might show us how we can begin to work with the subconscious mind or work with that kind of larger awareness to kind of achieve healings either more rapidly or more effectively. Mm-hmm. But I really love that story of Antonio who met the representation of his brain who asked him to please stop smoking but he made an agreement. He goes, look, stop the cravings, I'll stop smoking. And suddenly when he woke up, no cravings. So that's how magical and beautiful lucid dreaming can be.
Well, it's interesting because it's kind of like a wish. It's kind of like a wish fulfillment, and then it's kind of agreement with self, and it's kind of all symbolized, and it's what he wanted to do. It's fascinating what he was doing there. He was kind of separating out all the parts of himself and then making a pact with himself. It's really fascinating.
Yeah, it's kind of beautiful. But sometimes you think, you know, there's people who have obsessive compulsive disorder who like do hand washing all the time. What if they became lucidly aware and announced, hey, when I walk into that next room, I'm going to meet the representation of my hand washing obsession. And then when they go in there, you know, here's somebody with red raw hands, and they make some compromise like, hey, every time I think about hand washing, let me think about, you know, Beethoven instead or music or something. Where they make some sort of compromise where they, you know, begin to deal with that obsessive compulsive disorder. But anyway, that's why I think, you know, the lucid dreaming has such incredible promise for emotional healing and other aspects of healing that are there.
Yeah, I've also heard, I've not been able to do this myself yet, because what's happened is I've been sort of out of shape and not lucid dreaming as much. When I get lucid, then I get all excited and want to fly and want to do the fun stuff. And I'm not as disciplined now to be like, but I want to try meditation within my dream. I've heard people really rave that has been extremely helpful and calming to meditate within your lucid dream. And what have you heard about people who are able to do that?
Oh, it's utterly fascinating and definitely something I feel that every lucid dreamer should try. I remember I'd probably been lucid dreaming for 20 years, and someone asked me if I'd ever meditated in a lucid dream, and I thought, no, I'll give that a try. And so the next time I was walking down this dusty trail, and I thought, wait a second, where am I? And I realized that, you know, that I wasn't at home here in the U.S. And so I realized I was dreaming. I remembered that, oh, my friend wanted me to meditate. And so I just sat down on the trail in a half lotus position, and I began to meditate by emptying my mind. So people have different ideas about meditation. For some people, it's following your breath. For some people, it's chanting a word. For some people, it might be, you know, saying a prayer over and over or something like that. But for me, meditation meant emptying my mind. And what happened just totally stunned me. So I'm sitting on the trail. I begin to empty my mind. And as I do so, within like 30 seconds, it's like the dream imagery is suddenly being ripped away, and brilliant light is shining through the dream screen holes. You know, it's like the imagery is being ripped away and this brilliant light's coming through. Yeah. And that was so shocking that I kind of came out of the meditation and I thought, wow, that's strange. Maybe I should just close my eyes and meditate. And so I closed my eyes and began to meditate in the lucid dream. And within a minute, I was at a very profound place, you know, kind of this sense of utter oneness and transcendence and all. It was really beautiful. What surprised me is 10 years later, I was giving a webinar, and as part of the webinar, we had Michael Katz, who teaches dream yoga, and he's part of the Dzogchen Buddhist tradition. And when he heard me describe what happened to me in my first ever meditating in a lucid dream, he said, in the Buddhist Dzogchen tradition, that's exactly what's supposed to happen. When you empty your mind, you're supposed to suddenly begin to experience the clear light of awareness that's behind, you know, phenomenal reality. And he said he just couldn't believe that I managed to accomplish that in my first ever meditating experience. I do want to just mention one other thing. I have a good friend, Claire Johnson, who's a wonderful lucid dreamer. She's originally from England, lives in Germany now. But in this latest book that I've written with Carolyn McCrady called Lucid Dreaming, Plain and Simple, Claire Johnson said that in many of her lucid dreams, she meditates. And what she realized after doing, you know, like 10 meditative lucid dreams is that in waking life, suddenly her meditation is so much deeper. It's like in her lucid dreams, it gets profoundly deep within seconds. But that's enabled her now in her waking state when she begins to meditate. What used to take her 20 minutes to get to a profound state, now it's like in 5 minutes she suddenly gets there. And so so there's kind of a waking life effect that doing something like this, some spiritual or meditative practice in the lucid dream, actually begins to make it easier to do it in the waking world.
Wow. That's really neat. Maybe we're getting too advanced for people who have not, like, can't even remember their dreams. That'll be like, you know, 201 or 301.
It gives them something to shoot for.
Yeah, exactly.
There is another spiritual aspect of lucid dreaming that I hope people will consider. When I give talks, I tell people, I go, look, if you become lucidly aware, I don't think you should try to find God or experience God. Normally, when people do that, what happens is that they get so excited, they immediately wake up, or they feel this incredible energy and immediately wake up. Mm-hmm. And so I tell people, I go, look, what you ought to do is ask to experience a quality of the divine, like unconditional love. And so when you become lucidly aware, you're going to just ignore all the dream figures, ignore the setting, and just shout out to the dream, hey, dream, let me experience unconditional love. And I remember I gave this talk one time in London, England, and suggested that. About 6 months later, some people had me come back, and I gave another talk, and a woman raised her hand and said that a few months ago, after my first talk, she had stopped in a lucid dream and said, hey, let me experience unconditional love. And she said the resulting conceptual experience, she said it was so utterly powerful to feel love at such a deep, unconditional, powerful level in her lucid dream. She said that when she woke up from her lucid dream, she sat in her bed and cried tears of joy for 15 minutes. Oh. She said that's how powerful the experience was. She said finally her apartment mate knocked on the door and asked her if she was doing okay. And she said, oh yeah, I'm doing fine. But when she told the story, it was like her whole face lit up. It was like seeing somebody who had had an utterly profound experience. So don't try to visit God or Jesus or Buddha. You know, not because I want to keep people away from spiritual figures. It's just that most people can't handle that kind of intensity of intent. Instead, you know, let me experience unconditional love, or hey, let me experience divine grace. Or, hey, show me, you know, the true meaning of whatever spiritual concept it is. Mm. And oftentimes in a lucid dream, you'll have these concepts, these conceptual experiences, and they will utterly, completely blow your mind.
And really just starting to have dreams that you remember is the first place to start. And then do you have a way that you started to, I think you had mentioned looking at your hands was a way that you were trying to wake up within. Right. Is that how you started?
Yeah, that's how I started lucid dreaming. Back in 1975, it hadn't been scientifically proven yet, and so there really wasn't very many books. But I was reading this book, Journey to Ixtlan by Carlos Castaneda. And in this book, he's a UCLA graduate student in anthropology, and he was wanting to write his master's or doctoral degree on psychoactive plants like peyote. And so he goes to Arizona, and he happens to meet this shamanic guy, Don Juan, and they develop this very long relationship. But anyway, in this book, Journey to Ixtlan, Don Juan asks him to try to find his hands in the dream state and become consciously aware. And there really wasn't any more to it than that. But I thought, wow, could someone really become consciously aware in their dreams? And so what I did, because I knew about the power of suggestion, I would just look at my hands, the palm of my hands, before I went to sleep. And for about 5 minutes, I would repeat to myself, tonight in my dreams, I'll see my hands and realize I'm dreaming. Tonight in my dreams, I'll see my hands and realize I'm dreaming. And so I do that for about 5 minutes and fall asleep. On the third night, I'm walking through my high school hallway, and I was in high school at the time, and all of a sudden my hands pop right in front of my face. Mm. And I go, oh, my hands, this is a dream. Mm. And it was such a powerful experience to realize that, gosh, these guys over here, they're dream figures, and this wall that feels so cool and nubby as I touch it is actually composed of dream stuff. It's a projection of my mind. And so that's what got me started. I went on and had a really powerful first induced lucid dream. But that's how I got started looking at my hands. But there's other things you can do. You can use the power of suggestion, like, tonight in my dreams, I'll be more consciously aware. And when I see something strange, I'll realize I'm dreaming. Mm-hmm. But in my books, I give a lot of examples and also various tips and techniques on how to become lucidly aware and also how to respond. Because like you say, if you become lucidly aware and get too excited, sometimes you can pop out of the lucid dream. Mm-hmm. Or if you become lucidly aware and don't maintain your focus, you can just get caught up in the dream activity and forget that it's a lucid dream and just return to regular dreaming.
Right.
So there's really a lot to learn. Just becoming lucid is just the first part. I mean, that's like jumping into the lake. You still need to know how to swim,
right,
if you're going to get anywhere.
Yeah, it can take years to have any real success with it, but it can be a lot of fun. I mean, you're spending a third of your life sleeping. I figure, you know, hone some skills, people, right?
Take advantage of it.
Yeah, you're sleeping anyway. So develop a dream life. And for anybody listening to this, the books by Robert Wagner, it's The Lucid Dreaming, Plain and Simple, which is co-authored with Carolyn McCrady, and Lucid Dreaming, Gateway to the Inner Self. Those will be in the show notes. And your website is lucidadvice.com. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, lucidadvice.com. And also I have an online magazine, The Lucid Dreaming Experience, which you can find at dreaminglucid.com.
Dreaminglucid.com. Yeah, it's what I figure is that even if you don't remember any of your dreams or it doesn't seem that important to you, if you're sleeping anyway, which if you're human, you're sleeping. So I just think it's still a world that's kind of this untapped world for a lot of people. And I have found so many insights, and my prayer and meditation life is very, very, very rich, and I can go to sleep in under a minute, and that's not because I'm special. It's because of all the lucid dreaming and all the meditative practices that's been developed in those ways over the years. And so people I'm not going to sleep in under a minute every single night, but people are really shocked when I say that it really under 2 minutes I can fall asleep. And it's not because of anything probably except for honing those skills and developing those practices.
Right, right. And the beautiful thing about dreams and lucid dreams is they kind of show us our undiscovered self. I remember Carl Jung had some comment that what we fail to make conscious, we'll call the unconscious, and it'll control our lives. Mm. And so if you become conscious of the unconscious, then you finally get in control of your life and come to a better understanding of it.
Mm. Yeah, and it's interesting how as you kind of peer into those places, they surface, and then you can kind of resolve them. Because I think you're going to wind up, like, when you wind up getting busy or getting kind of overwhelmed with life, you start, like, I'll start to have anxiety dreams where I will, like, my teeth will fall out or something like that, right? Those types of things. Or I'll show up with the wrong clothes on or something. And I'll think, maybe I'm going to have to take a step back and, you know, look at these things. What am I going to have to say no to in my waking life? Because they're always going to be reflecting back my real life and helping me see better in my waking life, in my relationships.
Exactly. And that's kind of one of those beautiful dreams that we can all connect with, you know, our teeth falling out or not having enough clothes or finding out that, oh my gosh, we're in the class, but we didn't study for the test or whatever it is. And all those kind of anxiety dreams, that they do help us when we wake up realize that, wait a second, we got to look at what's going on in our life and make some adjustments to reduce that kind of inner feeling.
Mm. And so where can people find you? I know you're on Twitter, and do you have other places where you can be found?
Well, so I'm on Facebook and Twitter. My lucidadvice.com is a wonderful way to see all the various places that I'll be speaking at. Like, I'll be in Ireland the last weekend in October in 2016. In January 2017, I'll be in Seattle and San Francisco. And so I travel around, and I'm always happy to hear from people or answer their questions. So it's a wonderful thing, lucid dreaming, and it's really my life's calling here for the second half of my life.
Well, I feel like we just started digging in. Would you be willing to come back on the program at a later date?
Oh, sure. I'd love to, because there's so much more to talk about when it comes to lucid dreaming, about how we can use it to access creativity, how we can use it to promote our physical health, and how we can use it to kind of explore our larger awareness and consciousness. So I'd love to come back.
That would be so fun. Thank you so much for being on the program today.
Thank you, Lisa.
Show notes for this episode can be found at sparkmymuse.com. There you'll find details for websites and people and books mentioned in this episode, and sometimes you'll find photos and videos too.